ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast, Tom with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Tuesday. Oh. It's a Tuesday episode of the ABC Cricket Podcast. Apologies, we weren't here yesterday. We had a jam schedule and as a result, we're here a day late. But never fear, you get your time with your boys now with the headphones on and just block out everything else that's going on in the world. How are you, Teddy?
Corb, you're too good to me. You've taken one for the team. It was solely on me. I had a last-minute commitment at work that I couldn't get out of. So you don't need to take any accountability. It was, I know we're a team, one dream.
Yep.
But listeners can direct all their upset emails to edcowan@abccricketpodcast.com.au.
People are shocked too. They're like, damn, I thought he did this full time. I thought the one episode a week on the cricket podcast was his full time gig. And turns out there's other stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable in Ed Cowan's life. The cricket's around the corner. So we're into August and we're 9 days away from the first ball being sent down up at Morara Oval in Darwin, which is a drop in pitch, by the way. So drop in's now up in Darwin, which who knows what role that's going to play. The Aussies are fully loaded. They've got a little hiccup, must be said. Josh Inglis had a back spasm, so that kept him out of portions of the intra-club that was played, or the warm-up game that was played up in Brisbane. So the team's gathering there. There's a squad of just under 20, I think, that are there currently training at the moment, even though the official squad's only 13 that'll make their way to Darwin. So there's a few more support members as part of that. And then off they go. So two tests against Bangladesh, and then do you know what it is, Teddy? It's like the boulder at the top of the hill. And the boulder is the potential energy. And then somebody pushes the boulder off and then it becomes kinetic energy as it goes all the way down the hill. And that is the Australian test team over the next 12 months. 21 test matches in 12 months. And then that boulder, once it gets up a bit of steam, is going to roll all the way through to the fifth test of the Ashes next year.
Yeah, it's an exciting period. You're right. And it just takes me to the psychology of the team for these two test matches. I think they'll be easing into it. Corb, is my gut feel. Do you know where the drop-in is coming from? Is it from out the back? Is it been on a truck through the desert from Adelaide all the way up to Darwin? Do we have...
But I can find out. Leave that. Let me do some little research on the square at Darwin for next week. So yeah.
My gut feel is it's been laid out the back.
Okay.
And they prepare it out there, or one or two, and they just pick the trays up and ship them in.
Right. And what does that generally lead to?
To conditions that are more localized, I'd say, as opposed to there are situations, you know, I've seen in the past where, you know, for instance, the New York wicket for the World Cup was grown and housed in Texas and they put it on a truck and it's, you know, just a very different climate and reacts differently, hasn't been looked after or curated to the, you know, by the same people, et cetera, et cetera. So this feels a little bit more natural, I would assume, but more info required.
Yep. And then Mackay is actually a traditional surface. So,
yeah. Great place to play cricket, Mackay.
Yeah, I've never been. I'm actually looking forward to going. So seen, obviously, plenty of games there on television, but never actually been to Mackay.
You're my favourite, and I've rolled this out before, but my favourite Mackay cricket trivia question is the 1992 World Cup. That's where India was set to play Pakistan.
Mate.
In Mackay. It was rained out, unfortunately, so there was no fixture. But it blows my mind that not so long ago in our lifetime, India were playing Pakistan in Mackay.
And now there's governments falling over themselves trying to throw as much money as they can to secure such a fixture. And by the way, Mackay wasn't then what it is now. So it's amazing what... how far we've come on that front. So we'll talk about that more, obviously, next week as we edge a little bit closer at the particular time. But the boys are getting ready. Bangladesh have named their squad, and unfortunately, as we know, there's a few injuries on that front. So they're not as strong as they would have been at full strength. But we'll see what we get up in Darwin for the first test on August the 13th. Of course, you can hear it all on ABC Sport.
I don't spend much time on the socials these days, but... usually when we talk selection, usually finds its way onto social media somehow. You know, our great social media team.
The team loves.
Did you read the comments? No, we love reading the comments. I never read the comments even when I am lurking around. So yeah.
No, very rarely. Very rarely.
So you didn't get a temperature?
No. Did you?
No, I didn't, log in.
I was going to say. So Twitter and social media sometimes, you know, protect yourself at all times. You got to keep your hands up and stay out of the comments. I didn't. I apologise on that front. But the only feedback I'm interested in is from our listeners. ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. AB Medal, we asked for it. They've delivered. So it's this Friday. Would you believe that it's going to be presented? It's amazing how we talk about things here and then all of a sudden, bang, it pops up and away we go, which I didn't realise it was so soon. So it's short notice. I've got to try and get my tux together and send that off to the dry cleaner and everything else and find my way to Brisbane. But it's a lot to happen in 1 week.
Feels like it'll be done in tracksuits or over Zoom. I think the days of the tuxedo and the crown palladium are well and truly past the AV medal. But who knows, maybe in future years. But this year we'll be getting little video snippets of Travis Head saying, "It's a real honour to be awarded the Alan Border medal. It means so much to me."
Does he win it?
I think he probably does, doesn't he?
Head, Carey, Smith, Stark, seemingly the top four.
Ooh. Maybe Alex Carey.
Yeah.
No. Two, I mean, four great names.
Yeah.
I think, oddly, the least likely person there is probably Steve Smith.
Yep. I'm probably Head Start Carey, if I had to stack them.
Yep. I think I'd probably agree with you on that.
Still on Australian cricket news, Adam Zampa is off to a third state. So this is unsurprising. He lives in Byron Bay, which is, yeah, for people that aren't familiar with the geography of the East Coast, Byron Bay is essentially just on from the Gold Coast. So it's closer to Brisbane as the capital as it is than it is to Sydney. So he's cut ties with the Blues. He's going to join Queensland. The other thing is he hasn't really played domestic cricket anyway. He's played two matches in two seasons. But it'll mean that he's playing for a third state. So he started at the Blues, went to the Redbacks, or South Australia, whatever they call them now, back to the Blues, and now he's going to play for Queensland. So immediately when I was going through this during the week, Teddy, my brain sort of just shot off a little alert. I thought, gee, playing for three of the six states is unusual. I thought, how many other guys have done that? And so I just thought in more recent memory.
Dan Christian.
Yes, Dan Christian's one. Mm. He's on my list. There's a guy that's represented three states. There's a lot of New South Wales connection here. So this should be, you've played with most of these guys.
Ooh, I've got one.
Yep.
Michael Klinger.
Maxi Klinger's there.
Oh, you've caught me off guard. What about going back a little bit longer, someone who didn't play much domestic cricket, Shane Watson, started his career in Tasmania.
Sneaky good one.
Yep. Then to Queensland and then New South Wales.
Absolutely. No, I like it. That's a pretty good effort. Gurinder Sandhu, I would have taken.
I wouldn't have got that, yep.
Aiden Blizzard, who I wouldn't have got. Big Zard fan. I was there the day that he hit that ball up over the moon and onto the practice nets at the WACA ground. Michael Bevan.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm just racking my brain. Did he made his debut for South Australia when he was at the Cricket Academy, I think.
Yeah.
And so he was technically not contracted anyway, not that contracts were much of a thing, but he was at Del Monte in Adelaide. South Australia picked him, then he moved back to New South Wales.
Yeah, and then played for Tassie right at the end.
Yeah, had an absolute monster season at Belrive over 1 year.
Yeah. He was also part of that, the early days of the IPL. So when you go on his Crick Info profile, it's got, you know, third last game, 2006, playing for Tasmania, and then next game, 2008. 2 years later, he's playing for Chennai. I played two games for them, and then that was it. So there's a few in that bracket. The guys that were, you know, name brand players of world cricket that when the IPL came in, I got a look in at that particular stage. And then Colin Miller, Trevor Chappell.
Fascinating. Great question.
There we go.
Well done.
That's right up the alley of our listening audience, I'm sure, with domestic cricket, little throwback. Still on Australian cricket, names started to be linked to the Big Bash, obviously, this year, despite the fact that CA and the ACA are still in talks over amended list rules, what that looks like. Part of the talks, as we've speculated on for a long period of time, and I think I even asked Alistair Dobson about this, that the overseas draft would be scrapped. It seems like that's going to be the favoured way, and guys will essentially be able to sign direct with franchises, which means there's going to be a bidding war for their services, whether that's organised in an auction forum or whether it's unofficial. Finn Allen's one of those names. So he spent the last 2 years with Perth, but the Adelaide Strikers are pretty big in for him, and you can understand why they would be, given what a weapon he is in T20 cricket. But the biggest name is Ben Stokes, who's been linked with your Sydney Cricket Sixers, Teddy. And obviously there's the Matthew Mott connection in all of that as well. And the other team that's been also in for him is the Hobart Hurricanes, who are interested in Ben Stokes coming out and playing in the BBL.
What's your source here?
It's a Daniel Cherney story on Code Sports, as I remember coming across it. And I'd like to attribute these things when I get the opportunity. So the chief cricket writer, Daniel Cherney, had that story.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Is it good for the BBL? Ben Stokes playing here?
Great for the BBL. I mean, forever and a day we've been banging the table. The Big Bash needs international stars.
Yep.
Pay domestic players more, less David Paynes of the world rolling out fast orthodox spin off a medium paces run up, and more bums on seat desperate to watch Ben Stokes play cricket.
Mm. Speaking of England, we're nothing if not a segues game here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. The ECB have named former New Zealand captain Stephen Fleming as England's new coach. So same theme, a Kiwi is going to take charge of the Red Ball program. Joe Root's going to resume the captaincy. Stephen Fleming, by the way, won 5 titles in the IPL. There is a 3-match series coming up against Pakistan, which we were told, England want to appoint a coach in time for that. He is the coach. He's not going to coach that series. So Marcus Trescothick will instead act as the interim coach. England, by the way, have lost 8 of their last 13 test matches. They've gone 14 months without a series victory. Fleming will officially start in December 2026. So that's essentially his tenure begins first official duties with the winter tour of South Africa, which starts on the 17th of December. So 4-year deal takes him through to September of 2030. But Stephen Fleming's a man, but not until December.
Yeah, well negotiated. I mean, why take a little bit of gardening leave, clear admin to-do lists and get stuck into it? My great friend Pete kindly said, doesn't Flemball just doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
Flemball, yeah.
Flemball, coughed up a Flemball. What was my initial reaction to this? World-class coach, everyone that's played under him, and of course he had a stint at the Melbourne Stars, just raves about his people management skills. That's right from Mike Hussey, who's played under him at the Chennai Super Kings and coached alongside him, right down to people that I know that have played at the Stars. Just world-class coach. But there's a little asterisk around, that is very much franchise-based cricket. Do those skills correspond to, the treadmill of international test cricket? I think they do. And I think ultimately, those that were looking at this appointment had to take a little bit of a holistic view as soon as Brendan McCullum was taking the one-day and white ball teams, because you needed someone who could work hand in glove with him. And so it was a tricky assignment. Find an amazing coach who's willing to do the grind of test cricket, who can also manage Brendan McCullum, mm-hmm. or work alongside him, not necessarily manage. And there was probably only one person in the world that could do that once you kind of laid those things down, and it's Stephen Fleming, and they got their man, so to speak. So I think a great appointment. It'll be super fascinating to see how this plays out. I mean, a wonderful captain, great tactical player, captain, and now coach. Obviously, great success with the Chennai Super Kings. But there's one kind of thing missing from his resume, and that is never won a series against Australia. Mm. And maybe that was the team that, he was dealt as captain, but, it'll be interesting to see how that translates to next year's Ashes series.
Did he win a test against Australia?
I don't think he won a test. I think it was 0-14. Sorry. Yep. I good pickup. I meant test.
Yeah, that's even more damning on that front. A few quotes. So this is from Rob Key speaking with Henry Moran on the BBC. Fleming will refine what is potentially a world-class team. We've lost an entire generation bar Joe Root of player. We've lost nearly 1,000 wickets in the last 2 to 3 years. There is so much potential, and Stephen Fleming will be the person, I believe, who can realise that potential. A bowling attack that can go out there and be relentless. Batters the same. We've got the best two coaches going. I think Joe Root's going to be an outstanding captain. He doesn't have to deal with all the stuff he had to deal with the last time at the end of that reign. The process has to be coach first, captain second. The coach has to feel that he's got a say in who's coming in. Stephen and I spoke at length, and we both agree that Joe was the best person to do it. What do you make of those quotes from Rob Key?
I think they're pretty much down the fairway. What do you think Harry Brooks thinking at the moment?
It's a good question. What he should be thinking is that this is a layup for him to be the next guy. He should have been the guy at this particular juncture. But now he's got a little bit of a runway. If things go swimmingly for him and his cricket keeps going on the up and up, and he keeps leading the white ball team, they have success, he should be the next test captain. Joe Root's not going to do it forever. So it feels like they've got a placeholder captain, hoping that it is going to be Harry Brook. And it's up to him. I think if he stays on the straight and narrow and they have success, I think he will be still England's next test captain. It's probably just going to be 18 months to 2 years later than what it should have been.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it will be a test of character to see how he reacts more broadly. And I think the positive flip side to not being captain is he can actually concentrate on knuckling down and finding his rhythm again in test cricket and understanding, you know, how his game can dominate as it did when he burst onto the scene. So it's just a bit of a watch, but I think you're right.
The 100, you've been following along?
Loosely.
Yep. 23 day league, which means we're already at the halfway mark. Total ticket sales and match day attendances are down compared to the strong numbers seen in 2025. So Ben Duckett voiced his surprise at that. He was one of a number of players that has mentioned it. But ECB officials note that domestic broadcast audiences and digital/social numbers have grown significantly.
We can spin it any which way you want. I mean, a few things to note from what's been reported. I think generally, and it's only a three-year competition, there is some animosity to changing of names and colours, and whether that flows through and normalises over time, we'll find out. I think in some places ticket prices have gone up and priced people out of the market, but I'm also hearing that the Oval, which has been, you know, full and owned by the Mumbai Indians, is charging extortionate amount of money for tickets, but it's, you know, the demographic is very much come in after work and have your evening drink, your evening summer drinks. It's less family friendly. And I'm also, you know, what's been reported is there's been a bit of a bifurcation already between the haves and the have-nots around being able to pull in, you know, big sponsorship dollars. So smaller market teams are really struggling from a sponsorship point of view, and those, you know, in the bigger cities are doing just fine. So all these things will normalize, they'll work their way through the system, but it's a pretty good case study for what could or could not happen here, and it kind of lends itself to the point that you've been making for a long time, which is why wouldn't we let that normalize and see where it falls out before we start making big decisions around our own league.
Alistair Dobson's over there, so it'll be interesting to see what he comes back with and what he picks up along the way, the boss of the BBL.
One thing I will say is the quality has gone up,
yep.
I think, with an extra overseas player, bigger money. So, you know, the quality of the player and the tournament is up, and sometimes it takes a while. You know, there's a lag effect. It might be a season or two for that to play through to sponsorship, to attendance, and ultimately to media rights. So things don't happen overnight, and it's an interesting watch. I do think it's also, you know, for all the shade, it's great for the women's game.
I was about to ask you exactly that. Can we learn something from that? Men and the women on the same day?
100% we can. I mean, whether or not we eventually get here, but I understand the rationale for carving out the WBBL, and you know, a lot to do with international schedules and you know, having your own place. But I think this competition proves that the appetite for cricket is there in the window for cricket, and turning up in October, you know, off Broadway, so to speak, doesn't have the same register with or resonance with cricket fans.
Plus, great for us, time zone here. I know because of the women's games played first, it's almost, you know, you get home at night, turn on the TV and you want to watch some cricket. Feels like the women's game's always on, beam back prime time for us on the East Coast in Australia. All right, we'll bring you up to date with that as we reach the concluding stages. So another 7 days on, we'll be towards the back end of the regular season or the round robin stage of the tournament next week. Biggest story in cricket this week. Can't believe it's taken us 22 minutes to get here. Clicky Ponting.
What? You go first here. I've got a feeling we're not going to see this the same way, so I'll let you articulate your views.
So I actually, usually I'm the kind of, get it, I'm like the sports guy on the radio that, yeah, this is how it is and rah, rah. I don't have a strong opinion on this, to be honest. I thought I would, but Saltburn Cricket Club, if you haven't caught up with the story, you've been living under a rock. Second 11, North Yorkshire and South Durham League. Fielder clicking his fingers as the ball passes the outside edge of the bat. Sparked an absolute wave of social media interaction, as you can imagine. And then data analysts have done some work on this that number of catches taken by the wicketkeeper in games in which this guy particularly plays have gone through the roof. There were 8 catches in one innings. The test record is 7. And Saltburn's Gloveman has taken 31 catches in 8 matches, which, by the way, Brad Haddon took 29 catches across 10 innings in the 2013 Ashes. So he's got an indefinite ban. I think we all know it's not what we want in the game. It's cheating. It's underhanded tactics. But there is also part of it, isn't there, that like, this is grade cricket, like the weird stuff that goes on.
It's village cricket.
Village cricket in suburban, like, I remember playing in a team and all this kind of rubbish was going on, and every sort of cricket club has a story. Dumb stuff that used to happen on, hard wicket sort of local park cricket and everything else. So I can understand how they get there. And this is a guy that is a 38-year-old amateur cricketer who plays on the weekend, who's the centre of a global storm. Like, he's a father. He's the company secretary for a livestock auction house and estate agency. And all of a sudden now his name's plastered all across the world. So I wasn't anticipating this to be as big a cricket story that we've had in the year.
I mean, not that we should make too much light of it, but the statistical analysis really tickled me when people started doing standard deviations of dismissals caught behind in the league and for the club, and people were taking it very seriously. And I think it plays to the heart of why we love the game and the gentlemanly roots of it around sportsmanship. But ultimately, this is just a guy in village cricket. There's probably some guy having a pint at long off who just wants to win a little bit too much. And were his teammates complicit? Probably. Is there contrition? I don't know. Haven't heard a public apology. I don't quite know what to make of this. And also, my cricketing experience is very much of, is there a difference between appealing when you know that someone's not out and picking on a weak umpire, or clicking your fingers in slips? And everyone's been a part of probably the first.
Do you think he's the first?
Get wrapped on the pads and we're up here, boys.
Do you think he's the first guy in the history of the game that's ever done that?
No, because my dad, you would tell a story that he played one game on the SCG, and I should probably not name the player that then became quite famous. And he always said, I think always in jest, that the second slip clicked his fingers when he missed the ball and he got given out for 2 runs and it ruined his cricket career. And I used to say, mate, it's not actually possible for that to happen, because the sounds are so different. They happen at different times. The umpire wouldn't be that stupid. And I guess I've been proved wrong, perhaps. Maybe that did happen. My cricket brain, and maybe in village cricket, they're standing so close that it's easier to perform this act of trickery. Because if you're playing a proper game of cricket and you're standing 10 metres back and the ball's carrying through, there's no way the umpire, who's then 30 metres away, is putting those two sounds together. Like, they're such minute sounds. So I still don't know if it worked or not. I'm a little bit up in the air here. I really am.
I feel like it's one of those things where if you've played like village cricket or community cricket, you go, oh, I understand how we got here. And like if you haven't, you go, I'm incredibly righteous about this. That's the worst thing in the world. What a disgraceful act of cheating. It's kind of, you think it's one step that leads to the other that leads to the next and so on and so forth. What about the grade cricketer boys, by the way? So this story got completely relayed to me the wrong way. So originally I got told the Vision first surfaced on the grade cricket, that they were the ones that essentially brought this into the world.
They outed him.
Which wasn't the case, by the way. That's untrue.
But they were early adopters.
But they are, you get on with Pez and he goes incredibly well, like two of the better guys you'll possibly find. They've stepped in here to essentially help the guy at the centre of it. And the reason that they provided as part of it, so in a statement, TGC aims to find humanity in the absurdity of cricket for everyone who has never made it. For over a decade, we've celebrated and benefited from the low-rent charm of club cricket's rich, dark underbelly alongside hundreds and thousands of people around the world. Of course, it would appear some members of the Saltburn Cricket Club have engaged in comically sharp practice, but sadly, when people like Piers Morgan declare that to millions that Clicky Ponty must be the biggest cheat in cricket history, all proportionality is lost, and we feel a brotherly obligation to support the club in that context. So,
that is a great statement.
So they've essentially jumped in to be able to help this guy here in sort of any kind of legal matters that arise from it, and also I think they've set up a fund to essentially support umpiring in the league.
I think that's that's good, very good. That's excellent. Guerrilla advertising. And you also know, if you're on the other side of a debate to Piers Morgan, you're usually on the right side of the debate.
Shout out to the boys from TGC on the back of that. Our own listener emails that are coming through, abccricketpodcast@abc.net.au.
Sam, I start getting nervous about now every week. Take a breath. So go.
Here we go. Sam, love the pod. It's my number one choice because it talks about cricket 100% of the time. Ed mentioned that the IPL owners aren't buying a BBL team for a financial return. What are they interested in then?
They're interested in power, influence, and the talent pathway into their own IPL teams where they will make money.
Jeff says, given New Zealand have knocked off India and England away from home, should we be taking them more seriously this summer as a threat?
These are good. I like the direct questions, not the rambling comments dressed up as questions. Great question. Yes, but at the same time, very different conditions. And we talked about this maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks ago, around the bounce of the ball. And, those conditions are very, stumps are in play the whole innings as a bowler, lots of LBWs and bolds. In Australia, obviously, the bounce of the ball is more significant and more caught behinds, and so it works two ways. They don't really have the nasty fasties. They've got a couple of guys that can crank it up, but not with regular pace. And secondly, the batting techniques and we saw this last year with England, the 45-degree blade that becomes, catching practice behind the stumps. We do have those fast bowlers to exploit those technical nuances. And so, I think the wickets in New Zealand are more like England than they are in Australia, and it will be interesting to see how they handle the bounce and pace.
I think based off history, they are absolutely deserving of the tag of a significant underdog here. Like, history will tell you that, and it's up to them to basically put up some kind of a show in the first test and change their mind. Otherwise, I assume Australia is going to win 3-0, 4-0, whatever it turns out to be. Matt says, idea for England coaching job would be Chris Rogers. Bridge between the old and the new and a great mentor to young players. Sharp mind for test cricket. Might just let that stand as a comment from Matt.
Comment, yep.
Sam says, what do you think of the Matthew Mott appointment? I'm curious, do you think there's a big difference between men's and women's game from a coaching point of view?
Well, a reminder of Matthew's pathway. Obviously, coached New South Wales, then coached the Australian women's team, then coached England, and has now been a part of the Sixers male program while coaching the women's Sixers. So are the games fundamentally different? No, but there are variations to tactics for sure, and how people match up and where runs are scored and, you know, what's more dominant, for instance. And so a good coach can be across those. I think if you actually think about philosophies and then methods, the philosophies translate and then the methods need to be varied. And so a strong coach will have underpinning, strong philosophy that he can then attach different methods to get the most out of different players, whether they're male or female.
Matt from Brunswick heads off the email, which is in the show notes, by the way, if you want to send an email through and ask a question to Teddy. Love the pod. Thanks for keeping the cricket fire burning through the winter. How close is Matt Renshaw to making a test comeback? He's a versatile lower order player, so if that situation doesn't fit for Travis to open, Renshaw could. His part-time spin has also been handy. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I put him in the Josh Inglis bucket of highly adaptable and we've seen it, bat down the order or open the batting. And so I'd probably suggest he's next batter in, aside from Inglis as a spare batsman.
Yep. What does he have to do to supplant?
Well, it's like anyone. I mean, whether that's Curtis Patterson or Matt Renshaw, you pile on the runs at the right time and opportunity presents itself and you're there.
Yeah. Where's Cam Green's best spot, by the way, in the lineup?
Oh, you're asking all the big questions.
I know. This is just, I don't know why this just popped in my head. But it, like, if you think, and I
think it's six. Personally, I think it's six. I think he can bat at four, but I think at the moment his best spot is six.
Yeah. Is it a good decision to bed down a spot for him rather than him going all the way up and all the way down the order?
I think you know the answer to that.
Yeah. So if you were going into this next stretch and you know that South Africa's coming up and then New Zealand at home, and clearly he's their guy, right? They like him. They got two against Bangladesh. Do you just come out now and say, hey, Cam, we'll see you in Sydney or whatever it turns out to be, and you'll be batting six then and you're batting six this week and it's yours to lose?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the plan or history of this team. I think, positions have been pretty fungible and people have been flexible between those. And so that's been their philosophy.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily agree with my philosophy on how to pick batting lineups, but it's worked for them, so it's hard to argue.
And remembering Steve Smith's quote at the time when he went to open the batting was that it's because Cam Green is the future of Australian cricket and his best spot in the lineup is number four. So as a result, he got out of number four to make it work for Cam.
It may well be long-term. It's what I've seen in the last 18 months suggests it's six at the moment and ideally it's four.
Yep.
You got to earn that right.
Correct. And the Ricky Ponting story, for example, where, come in the team at six is generally what's happened for the newest batter in the side. Bet it down and then go up from there.
And people are thinking, he's at six. Where's I'm Webster at seven and Carey at five.
Is Carey at five?
Well, I think record would suggest that he's the next best bat.
Yep.
To come through, and so.
And it's not too high for him in Test cricket.
Hell no.
No.
Absolutely. I mean, the only thing is workload.
Yeah. Second innings, we're three for nothing, and all of a sudden he's been standing in the field for a day, and then he's
yeah, sure. I mean, the only thing to counter that is long gone are the days of big grinding innings of 180 overs, and you got to he's keeping for 65 overs, 70 overs.
We had two day test matches last summer, so yeah. No, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Like you said, he's proven with the stick he's more than capable. Shout out to Kyle from Springwood, who loves the pod. He and his son listen every Monday on the way to and from cricket training. He has an idea to split the BBL up into two halves either side of the Test cricket schedule, and the Shield runs concurrent with the Test summer. So it would fill a gap when there's not much sport on. What are your thoughts?
Explain that a bit more to me. You've got the writing in front of you.
Split the BBL up into two halves. So basically, play the first half of the BBL season, then have the Test summer, play the Sheffield Shield at the same time, and then complete the BBL.
I think momentum's important in tournaments, and I think crowds have been proven to be driven by peak holiday season. And so every time they've moved earlier, the crowds have been down, and every time they focus their attention on peak holiday time, the crowds have been up. So I'd like the idea from how do we balance the summer more, but I think it doesn't really work would probably be my gut feel.
Shout out to Jason, by the way. He's on the same page as you for the Stokes comeback, especially now McCullum isn't there in the test program. Julian says, love listening to the recent Acquired podcast, which referenced Ed's fantastic analysis on the IPL as a business. One thing the IPL has done amazingly to grow the game is involve celebrities. Do you think that's been done in the BBL or could be an option?
Yeah, I mean,
different culture too.
It is a different culture. They've involved celebrities as owners. I think generally the only way the Big Bash has done this is who bowls the first ball, and it's a 10-second thing for TV. So is there a way, and this is a broader question, of intertwining, you know, cultural momentum more broadly into cricket, given that that is, you know, peak kind of cultural zeitgeist for 8 weeks of the year? Absolutely. And that comes to what merchandise is sold, how relevant is that to, it's not just a pink bucket hat at the Sixers. It's like, how could that be a cool Sydney street brand? There's a whole range of things that other sports have done that have been very successful, right from influencers to merchandise strategy, that intersect cultural interest, and cricket is probably a bit of a laggard there.
Stuart says, long-time listener, first-time mailer. Ed, you and many others have noted the bloated Tier 2 county system. I think their own county review said the same thing. Why haven't they acted on this? From Stuart.
It's like any member-based organisation. It's very, very hard to change the status quo.
And Richard says, I think the overrates are a big issue and a shortchanging the spectators. Captains are constantly changing their fields. It seemed Ben Stokes did it every second ball. Baseball introduced a number of changes recently to speed up the game. Are there any that we can pinch for cricket? Where's Richard been? I've been banging on about pitch clocks for what, 2 years? Feels like every time, in baseball they do this, blah, blah, blah.
Longer.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, let's just get it right in T20 cricket to start with, let alone picking off the major issue of Test cricket. But T20 cricket goes for 4 hours these days. It's crazy.
We're with you, Richard, absolutely on that front. Baseball, there's no more sport in the world out there that's more hardcore, stuck in its ways when it comes to traditionalists, and you can't change it. They changed it. It worked. Games for the better. No one has any dramas with it. So if it works in baseball, it can work in Test cricket and in our game. That's good to hit out, Teddy, by the way. You can get in touch with us, ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. The email address is in the show notes. Thanks for your company.
Well done, Corb. Loved it.
Down on a Tuesday. So how about it? Monday next week, which means we only have 6 short days before we're back together. And full preview of the first test from up in Darwin. I will be in Darwin for that. And of course, you can hear it all available through the ABC Listen app. So every ball of Australia and Bangladesh. I'll catch you next week, Teddy.
Can't wait.